The Tenth Man, a play by Somerset Maugham. Adapted for radio by Peggy Wells, with Clifford Norgate in the part of George Winter. The Tenth Man.
I wish you'd sit down, Frank. You make me quite nervous, prowling around the drawing room like that.
How do you think I feel, Angela, to have news like this sprung on me without any warning? Oh, for heaven's sake, shut that damned barrel organ out. As if I hadn't got enough to bear.
All right, my dear, I'll close the window. There. Now sit down, dear, and let us talk things over quietly.
I can't think why the dickens you didn't tell me last night, Angela.
I had no wish to disturb my night's rest.
Upon my soul, I don't know what you mean. It's incomprehensible to me that you should have slept like a top. I couldn't have closed my eyes the whole night.
I know, and you'd have taken excellent care, but I shouldn't close mine either.
I should have thought I had enough to do without being pestered with a foolish woman's matrimonial difficulties.
You really have a very detached way of looking at things, Frank. No one would imagine to hear you speak that the foolish woman in question was your daughter.
Really, Angela, I must beg you not to make this a subject of flippancy.
Well, what do you propose to do?
Do? What do you expect me to do? You tell me that Kate came home at 12 o'clock last night in a ball dress without her luggage, without even a dressing case, and informs you that she's left her husband. It's absurd.
Quite absurd, and so unnecessarily dramatic.
Well, of course, it was a whim on Kate's part. Luckily, her husband's coming here this morning.
Is he?
Yes, he promised to fetch me in his car. We're going to drive down to the city together. I'll bring him in, and meanwhile you can talk to Kate. Well, I dare say she's thought better of it already. It only wants a little tact, and we can settle the whole thing. George is clever enough to have given some plausible explanation to the servants.
Are you really under the impression things are going to pass off in that way?
Hmm? Why not?
They say it's a wise man who knows his own father, but it's apparently a wiser man still who knows his own daughter.
Oh, Angela, for goodness sake, don't try to be bright and amusing.
Do you know so little of Kate as to imagine she would have taken a step of this kind without having quite made up her mind?
What? You don't mean to say you think Kate will refuse to go back to George?
I do.
Well, she must go back, that's all. You know just as well as I do that I can't afford to quarrel with George Winter. I'm chairman of half a dozen of his companies. The position would be intolerable.
I suppose you owe him money.
No, not exactly.
Yeah. And how much is it that you don't exactly owe him?
Well, we're mixed up together in any number of business undertakings, and naturally we have a sort of running account. If we settled up, I dare say I should have to find something like £15,000.
And how do you propose to raise £15,000?
That's just it. It would be devilish awkward. And George is in a confounded tight place, too. You must talk to Kate seriously, Angela.
Oh, here she is. Your father wishes to speak to you, Kate, dear.
Good morning, Father.
Be so good as to sit down, Catherine. Now, am I to understand that what your mother tells me is true?
Yes, Father. I lived with George as long as I could. For 4 years, I put up with more than any woman I know would have done. There are some things no one should suffer who has any self-respect.
You've never complained before of George's behavior?
No.
Why have you never said a word to your mother about it? I can't imagine why you shouldn't get on with George. I don't suppose you've ever expressed a whim that he hasn't gratified. Your allowance is princely. Your pearls are the envy of every woman in London.
Oh, yes, he's generous. My pearls have been a splendid advertisement.
Then what have you got to complain of?
I dare say my mother knows what half London is chattering about.
Well, Angela?
Oh, my dear, I hoped it was idle gossip. A man as much in the public eye as George Winter, the most prominent financier of the moment, certain to be talked about.
Kate, we aren't living under Victoria these days. This is 1910. You know what men are. You must extend a certain degree of license to a man of George's temperament.
You don't understand, Father. I bore my life till something happened which I couldn't endure. I've left him fully decided to divorce him. Nothing you can say will move me.
There are always two sides to every question.
I wonder if you'd go into the library, Frank.
Huh?
I should like to talk to Katie alone.
Oh, very well. Perhaps you can do something with her. Tell her what it means if she persists.
No, my dear.
Oh, Mother, you'll stand by me, won't you? You know what I've gone through. You must have some pity.
Why have you chosen this particular moment to leave your husband?
There are limits to human endurance.
Are you in love with someone else?
You have no right to ask me that, Mother.
Your indignation is almost an answer in itself. It's Robert Colby, isn't it? Well?
Yes.
And you've made your arrangements, I suppose, to be married as soon as the decree is made absolute?
We haven't discussed the matter.
But still, I may take it that is the intention.
Yes.
Your father wishes me to tell you that if you quarrel with George, you will ruin him. He could hardly keep the positions that George has given him on his various boards.
He'll be no worse off than before I married.
Except that it appears your father owes George £15,000.
Do you want to cheat me again out of the little happiness that seems in store for me?
I want you to do what is right in your own eyes.
How can you be so cruel?
May I come in?
George! How dare you!
Now, Kate, you mustn't look like that.
Good morning, George.
Good morning, Lady Frances. Well, Kate?
It's infamous that you should come here. If you had any decent
feeling... My dear child, I had a business engagement with your father. It's unreasonable to expect me not to keep it because you had temporarily abandoned the conjugal roof.
Father, you might have warned me.
My dear, I was hoping that after a talk with your mother...
What can I do to show you that I've made up my mind for good?
Even after one's made up one's mind, it's not too late to listen to reason.
I think for all our sakes, you should listen to anything that George has to say, Kate.
Do you understand what my mother means, George?
I dimly suspect.
My father owes you a lot of money. He thinks that if I divorce you, he'll have to pay that money.
I'm sure his sense of delicacy would prevent him from remaining in my debt.
And you'll make him resign his directorships of your companies?
I know him well enough to feel certain that he would never wish to retain them.
Oh, it's vile.
Or is it common sense? Now, look here, Kate, listen to me carefully. You know that all our interests are in Central America. The Lewishams had it all their own way out there till I came along. They owned the railways and the mines and the trams. Everything that was worth having. I've been fighting them tooth and nail for 10 years. They've done all they could to smash me, but they haven't succeeded. And now I can force them to come to terms.
All this is nothing to me.
The Lewishams got onto a big thing. A mine called the Campo del Oro. But that earthquake the other day cleared their pitch and they offered bills when hard cash was the only thing to do the trick. Well, I found the cash and bought the mine last week.
It doesn't interest me.
It will. I sent MacDonald out there.
MacDonald is George's expert. He's the soundest man in the profession.
I'm expecting his report any moment. Then I shall get to work. I'm going to float the mine as a company with a capital of 500,000. Your father will be chairman. And he ought to make close on 50,000 out of it. For a reason I needn't tell you, we can't afford to wait. We must have ready money, and that means floating the company at once. My only chance is in Middlepool, where three parts of my backing have come from before. We shall soon be in the middle of a general election, and you know how uncertain my seat in Middlepool is. I keep it only by my personal popularity. I'm at the mercy of the nonconformists, and if there's talk of a divorce, it's all over with me. They'll make me retire before the election. And if that happens, the new company won't stand a dog's chance.
I'm afraid you'll think it very selfish. But I haven't any more power of self-sacrifice in me.
If the mine is a failure, it'll knock down all the other companies I'm connected with. It'll mean your father's ruin and mine. I dare say you don't mind that. But it'll also mean the ruin of thousands of investors all over the country. 3/4 of the population of Middlepool will lose their savings.
You've lied to me so often, George.
I can show you by plain figures that every word I say is true.
I haven't much sympathy with gamblers who want to make money without working for it. If they lose, it's their own lookout.
Oh, don't be a damn fool. It's a matter of life and death to me, and do you think I'm going to... Please, Lady Frances, I would like to talk to Kate alone.
Come along, Frank. We'll go into the library.
Well, I hope you're able to knock some sense into her, that's all.
I don't think your elopement receives the unqualified approval of your parents, Kate.
Surely we said all that we had to say to one another last night.
You know, I wouldn't have fooled about with other women if you hadn't shown me very clearly that you didn't want to have anything to do with me.
I'd rather not discuss that.
Well, after all, it isn't as if I cared a tinker's cuss for the whole lot of them.
And you think that makes it any better? I think I could have forgiven you if you'd had any love for them. You exposed me to all that humiliation merely to gratify your vanity.
If you like, I'll give you my solemn word of honor that you shall have no cause to complain in future.
It's too late. You've given me my chance of freedom, and I mean to take it.
You're not keeping your part of the bargain.
What do you mean?
You didn't marry me because you were in love with me.
That's not true.
Think.
A year ago, I'd have said again that it wasn't true. I didn't know what love was.
You married me because I was rich.
No. No, I was dazzled by your success. I mistook it for love.
And I married you because I wanted a wife. You happen to have an uncle who's a duke. And aristocratic connections are devilish useful in England to a radical politician.
Yes, I found out soon enough why you married me.
It was a business arrangement on both sides. And you've had your full share of the profits.
Oh, how can you?
Well, you'd always lived in a pokey way, and I gave you magnificence.
If you bought an article and it hasn't turned out worth the money you gave for it, that's your lookout. You see, you've taught me something after all. Now, surely you have nothing more to say to me.
My dear, knowing how important it is to me that you should return to the conjugal roof, you don't imagine I've come without some means to persuade you.
I assure you, you're wasting your time.
You seem to be under the delusion it rests with you to make conditions. I have here a copy of a letter which you may remember. The original was so crumpled that I can't help thinking you were romantic enough to sleep with it under your pillow. It begins... My very dear friend.
How did you get hold of that?
I can never understand why people are such fools as to write love letters. I never do. I only send telegrams.
You broke open my dressing case.
When I made you a present of your dressing case, I kept the duplicate key in case you lost yours.
How like you. Well, there's nothing in any of my letters that I'm ashamed of.
I wonder what a clever counsel would make of this letter. I can imagine it read in such a manner that those vague words should gather form and substance.
What do you mean?
My dear, I'm going to bring a counter-petition, that's all. You want to wash your dirty linen in public? Let's have an entire spring cleaning.
Oh, my dear George, if you only knew how indifferent I am to such a threat. We haven't done anything with which we can reproach ourselves.
You astonish me, my dear Kate. Surely it can't have slipped your memory that Robert Colby, snatching a brief and well-earned holiday from affairs of state, made a tour of North Italy last Easter, and you accompanied him.
That's not true. You know it's not true. I went with Barbara Herbert.
And a maid. It's always a little unsafe to trust maids.
I went to Italy with your consent. I wrote and told you that I'd met Robert. Chance threw us together in Venice. We found we were making practically the same tour, and we joined forces. We had nothing to be ashamed of, therefore we had nothing to fear.
And do you think you will be able to persuade a British jury that you and Robert Colby travelled through Italy together merely to look at churches and pictures?
George, I promise you on my word of honour that I've never been unfaithful to you.
My dear, it's not a question of convincing me. I am the most trusting, the most credulous of mortals. But of convincing the 12 good men and true who form a British jury. I give you your choice. If you bring an action against me, I bring a counter-petition.
My choice was made long ago. I'm innocent.
You'll ruin me and your father. But you'll ruin Colby as well.
What do you mean?
You're surely not so simple-minded as to imagine he can do anything but resign his seat if he were made co-respondent in a divorce case. They say if we get in again, he's to be given the Ministry of War.
Robert and I have nothing to reproach ourselves with. Nothing.
You sent a note to him last night. What did you say?
I asked him to come here at 12 o'clock.
That is nearly 12 now. I'll wait. And you shall talk to him.
Hello, Kate.
Anne!
Good morning, George, dear. How are you today?
Oh, in my usual rude health. Thank you, Anne.
This is Teddy O'Donnell. I want to introduce him to you.
How do you do?
How do you do?
My brother-in-law is the Napoleon of finance, Teddy. He owns 17 companies, 5 gold mines, 2 railways, a house in Portman Square, 2 places in the country, a yacht, 5 motor cars, the family of Atchingham.
Stop talking such nonsense.
It's quite true.
Now, Anne, what is it you want?
You're an old dear, George.
Oh, I thought so. Well, what is it?
I want you to give Teddy a job.
Anne.
Oh, I say, you needn't put it so bluntly, Anne.
It's no good beating about the bush with George, is it?
Not much.
Now sit down and let me talk sensibly to you.
Anne, I'd rather you didn't just now. George and I are busy.
Is anything the matter?
No, nothing. Kate's a little under the weather this morning. Now, tell me why you want me to give Mr. O'Donnell a job.
Because we're going to be married.
Are you, by Jove?
Anne!
I offered her my hand and heart.
And being a practical person, I promptly inquired what were his worldly possessions.
They're not only nil, they're astonishingly nil. In point of fact, if you reckon debts, they're positively minus.
So, I fell into his arms and said, let us put up the banns at once.
And that's where I come in.
Well, I thought he might manage one of your railways or be your chauffeur.
What?
Or if you didn't think he was good enough for that, you might make him director of one of your companies.
And you don't know what you're talking about.
Good heavens, if Papa can direct companies, surely Teddy can.
No, I didn't mean that. But there are circumstances that you don't understand. Mr. O'Donnell can't ask George to do anything for him. Mr. O'Donnell...
Really, Kate, you might let me answer for myself.
Well, George always said he'd help me when I wanted to get married.
Mr. O'Donnell, I presume your idea is to go into the city.
Yes, more or less.
Educated at a public school, I suppose.
Yes.
Then may I take it that you tried to get into the army and failed?
Yes, I suppose I did.
Yes, and you hadn't got enough money to go into the diplomatic.
How on earth do you know, George?
When a young man of family and education tells me he wants to go into the city, I know it's because he's too incompetent to do anything else.
Well,
years ago, the fool of a good family went into the church. In 1910, he goes into the city.
You're not very flattering.
Well, I dare say you'll suit me all right.
Oh, George, you are a darling.
Anne, give me a kiss and I'll find him a job.
Oh, wow.
I'll give you two. There.
Well, I shan't find him two jobs.
I can't imagine why everybody's so afraid of you, George. You're an old dear.
A heart of gold. That's what I always tell Kate. Now, come and see me tomorrow morning, O'Donnell. We'll have a talk about things.
That's awfully good of you, sir.
You know, you'll have to do as you're told if you come to me.
I dare say I shan't mind that.
Well, it's not always pleasant being at the beck and call of a damned bounder.
How do you mean?
Oh, of course you look upon me as a damned bounder. I know that. I wasn't educated at a public school. My father was a hatter at Middlepool. I went to sea when I was 14. When I was your age, I was earning 25 bob a week as a clerk in a bucket shop. Of course, I'm a damn bounder.
Now, George, don't be disagreeable.
Well, run along, children. Oh, have you spoken to your father about this, Anne?
No, we're going to leave you to do that.
Are you?
Well, you see, Father's sure to kick up a bit of a row because Teddy's so absolutely stony. But if you say you're giving him a job...
Father may object, Anne.
Oh, he wouldn't dare if George said it was all right.
Are you really very keen on marrying?
Awfully.
Well, I'll see what I can do. Run along now.
Goodbye, darling George.
Goodbye, sir. See you tomorrow.
Bye.
George, you're not going to take him into your service. You must understand it's impossible.
Why?
We can accept nothing from you.
This disinterestedness is rather a new trait in your family, isn't it?
Anne will have to be told the facts. And she'll see at once that it's out of the question for Teddy to accept favours from you.
I wonder.
I have no doubt of it.
Do you think she'll be pleased when she's told that her marriage can't take place? Are you sure she won't say that she has no quarrel with me?
I should make her understand.
And what will you say? That I'll start her young man on 400 a year and allow her a couple of hundred more so that they can marry next week if they want to, but that you are divorcing me and it would be monstrous of them to accept my offer.
Oh, it's wicked of you. Each way I turn, you bar my way.
In the agitation of the moment, you seem to be mixing your metaphors, my dear.
Mr. Robert Colby has come, madam.
Oh.
I've shown him in the morning room. He said he would wait until you were disengaged, ma'am.
Ask him to come in, Thompson.
Very good, sir.
I'll go through to the library and discuss the weather and the crops with your excellent father. And you shall discuss the situation with Colby.
For goodness sake, leave me alone.
Suggest a counter-petition and see how he takes it. My own impression is that he'll run like a rabbit. And if he does, you know whose arms are open to receive you.
Oh.
As the library adjoins the drawing room, I shan't be far away if you want me.
Mr. Robert Colby.
Robert, how good of you to come.
My dear, you look as if you were surprised to see me.
You must be frantically busy. I thought you might not be able to manage it. Do you know what I've done?
I suspected what your note meant.
I'm seeing my solicitor today, and the petition will be filed as soon as ever it's possible.
I'm so glad. You had no right to go on with that degrading life.
Robert, tell me again that I'm right.
You know how much I love you.
Yes, I do know. You've shown me in everything you've done how much you cared.
You realize that I've never even kissed your hand, Kate.
I'm very grateful to you. Now more than ever, I want to feel quite sure that we have nothing to reproach ourselves with.
Were you angry with me when I wrote that letter to you?
I read it till I knew every word by heart. Sometimes I wonder how I could have borne my life at all except for the knowledge that you cared for me.
You've never once told me that you love me, Kate.
I love you with all my heart and soul.
And after it's all over?
It shall be as you wish.
You've meant so much to me, Kate. I owe all my success to you.
It makes me so proud to hear you say that, Bob.
Did you read the speech I made yesterday?
No, I'm afraid I haven't yet. Tell me all about it. I suppose it was the army debate.
Yes, I burnt my ships behind me. I said I thought some form of compulsory service was essential.
Oh.
The Prime Minister's going to the country at once. I think we shall get in. And if we do... Oh, I wish to goodness they'd give me the War Office. Of course, after 6 years in office, we can only hope for a small majority and every seat will count. I wonder what will happen at Middlepool.
George is very popular.
Yes, that's just it. As long as he was there, the seat was safe. I wonder if anyone else will be able to hold it.
Do you think it will be impossible for him to stand again?
Oh, quite. And rightly. No man's obliged to go into Parliament. If he does, it's his duty to keep clear of scandal.
I wonder what you'd do if you were beaten at the general election.
Oh, I don't think my constituents will throw me out as long as I behave myself.
And if they did?
It would just about finish me. Politics are my whole life.
Yes. Now you must go. I've got so much to do, and I'm sure you must have.
Goodbye, then. And God bless you.
I shall think of you all day long.
Goodbye.
The great man has taken his hook.
Yes.
I thought I heard him go.
Well, Catherine, I hope you've thought better of things.
Well?
You think every man is a rogue, George, don't you?
Certainly not. I think 9 men out of 10 are rogues or fools. That's why I make money.
And what will you do when you come across the 10th man, who's neither rogue nor fool?
Put him under a glass case.
You may find him awkward to deal with. Take care.
Oh, I shall. But I've looked for him so long that I can't help thinking he doesn't move in my set. Now and then I thought I'd really got him. But while I was wondering how the deuce I was going to manage, I've seen an itching palm steal softly out, and I knew it wasn't the 10th man after all.
Mr. Bennett would like to speak to Mr. Winter.
Is he on the telephone?
No, sir, he's here.
What the deuce can he want?
All right, I'll have a word with him, Thompson.
No, let's have him in. Perhaps it's something important, and he'll want to see me, too.
Perhaps. Show him in, Thompson.
Very good, sir.
Who is Mr. Bennett?
Oh, he's the secretary of 2 or 3 of our companies. He manages the office and that sort of thing.
He does all the work for which your father gets fees.
Oh, I don't know about that. I flatter myself I'm worth my salt.
Mr. Bennett.
Well, what's the matter, Fred?
I went round to Portman Square, sir, and they told me you were here. I thought I'd better come on at once.
Nothing has happened, Mr. Bennett.
No, my lord. May I speak to you for a moment, Mr. Winter, sir?
Yes. Etchingham, do you mind?
No, no, of course not. Come along, Kate. We'll go into the library. Call me when you're through, George.
Now, what the devil's the matter, Fred?
There's been a cable from McDonald's, sir.
Good. And when's the report due? I suppose it's following.
Yes.
Well, why the deuce didn't you ring me up? I'd have come down to the office at once. Now we've got that, we can go ahead.
I wouldn't risk it on the phone. You never know who's listening.
Well, what does the cable say?
It's not what you expect, sir.
What the hell do you mean?
The mine's rotten.
You filthy liar. What are you talking about?
Take care. They'll hear you. We've been done in the eye. The mine's worthless.
Worthless? It can't be. Can't be.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm in it as deep as you are.
If that's true, the 100,000 we paid for it might as well have been thrown down a drainpipe.
What are you going to do?
Do? Fight it out.
You know what it means if you fail.
The Old Bailey. But I shan't fail, Fred. I shan't fail.
The doctor says your father will be well enough to come downstairs tomorrow, Kate.
Oh, I'm glad of that, Mother. This is the second attack of gout he's had this year.
Poor old thing.
Close the window, will you, my dear?
Very well.
Do so wish that barrel organ wouldn't always play the same tune. It quite exhausts me.
Oh.
What's the matter?
George's carriage. They must have let him in.
Well, I suppose he's come to see your father.
He mustn't come in here. I won't see him. It's monstrous that I should have to put up with
this. My dear, don't worry. George hasn't made any attempt to see you for a fortnight.
Good afternoon, ladies.
George, what do you want? You've got no right to force yourself upon me.
I've just been served with this paper.
Well, what else did you expect?
Your father told me that nothing was going to be done about the divorce for the moment.
I can't help what father said. It's my business.
What is that paper, George?
Oh, would you like to look at it? It's an interesting document.
It's the divorce petition, Mother.
I wish I had my glasses. I've never seen one before.
You've been lucky.
Or virtuous.
Kate, you've got to withdraw this.
Surely you must see that from now, all communications between us must pass through our lawyers.
Listen to me, Kate. There have been references to a dispute between us in the Middlepool papers. And the Herald, the conservative rag, has stated in the current issue that you are divorcing me.
The Middlepool papers are singularly well informed.
That's where you're mistaken. The Argus is printing a special edition with a complete and authoritative denial of the whole story. I've issued a writ for libel against the Herald.
One lie, more or less, on your conscience can make no great difference to you.
But that's not enough. The Middlepool people are nervous about the whole thing. You know Swalecliffe? He's the nonconformist minister. He's on my committee. He and Ford control the dissenting interest between them. They've got it into their heads that they want the truth from you.
Me? Who is Ford?
The richest man in Middlepool. He's one of my directors on the Middlepool Investment Trust. Shrewd as they make them.
But I don't understand. What do these men want Kate to do?
They're coming here at 5 o'clock to ask Kate if there's any truth in the rumours.
But it's outrageous.
Of course it's outrageous.
And what do you expect Kate to say?
She's going to say it's the first she's heard of it. Then they're going to ask her if she's divorcing me, and she's going to repudiate the suggestion.
I refuse to see these people.
Do you?
Or do you want me to tell them before your face that every word they've heard is true? Yes, I'll see them. I'll settle the whole thing, and then I shall be rid of this persecution. But I shall tell them the exact truth.
We'll see. It's not 5 o'clock yet.
Mr. Pedigal.
My dear Bob, this is kind of you.
How do you do, Angela? Kate?
You never come and see us now, you're Prime Minister.
It's a delusion of the public, Kate, that the Prime Minister has nothing to do but pay afternoon calls. I'm very glad to see you here, Winter.
On the best possible terms with my mother-in-law.
Of course.
Well, when are you going to dissolve Parliament, Bob?
Do you know, I've been so busy I haven't had time to read the papers for some days. What do they say about it, Angela?
Don't be irritating.
My dear, a wise Prime Minister looks upon it as a privilege to fulfill the intelligent anticipations of the press.
I hope it's not true that you're going to give Emily Lassells the Home Office.
Good heavens, you talk as if your sex were already comfortably installed in the house.
You know perfectly what I mean. It doesn't matter about the men, because all the work is done by the permanent officials. But their wives are quite another matter. I tell you frankly, it'll be a great mistake if Emily Lassells goes to the Home Office.
Why?
She can't entertain. She doesn't know a word of French. She dresses abominably.
That settles it. Emily Lassell shall not go to the Home Office.
That is how history is made.
Oh, George, Frank bought a print of Napoleon the other day he wants to show you. Do come up, will you?
Of course.
George collects things about Napoleon, you know.
Ah, the Napoleon of finance. I'm sorry to hear that Frank's laid up.
Oh, he's much better today. We shall only be 5 minutes. Come along, George.
Right.
How naturally your mother did that. It almost took me in.
Have you come to see me by arrangement?
I'm up to my eyes in work. I'm afraid I could hardly find time for a chat in the middle of the afternoon without a rather special object.
I suppose not.
But your husband's presence leads me to suppose that your common sense has made my errand unnecessary.
Haven't you heard of the life we led together?
My dear, I make a point of never believing the disagreeable things that are said about a man who subscribes so handsomely to the party funds as your husband.
Then I have you against me, too.
My dear child, I've known you all your life. Your mother's my first cousin. We all desire nothing more than your happiness.
George was served with a divorce petition this morning.
Ah. It appears that two prominent supporters of your husband are coming up from Middlepool this afternoon to get from your own lips a denial of the rumors that have been circulating in the constituency.
I can promise you that they're not going to get it.
I wish I could persuade you to pause before you take such an irrevocable step.
But why should you care?
My dear, we've been in office for 6 years. We're dissolving Parliament at once. I don't know if we shall get in again. It'll be a very close shave. We can't afford to risk a couple of seats.
A couple?
The Chief Whip tells me that your husband proposes to lodge a counter-petition.
If it weren't so odious, the idea would be laughable. I promise you that Robert...
Oh, yes, of course. Neither you nor Robert Colby has anything to reproach himself with. That's obvious. But, well, I gather that the evidence is such that a prima facie case could be made out. It would be awkward just at this moment for all of us. I myself could wish that my relationship to your dear mother weren't quite so close.
Do you mean that if my husband drags Robert through the divorce court, you'll throw Robert overboard, even if his innocence is proved through and through?
My dear, no one is so innocent that there's not occasion for some people to shake their heads and say, one never knows. I don't suppose any Prime Minister would invite a man to enter his cabinet who'd been correspondent in a divorce suit.
He set his heart on getting the War Office.
Well, you have it in your hands to give it to him.
Does Robert know that George has made certain threats?
No, I think not.
Oh, what a responsibility you put upon me.
That generally goes with power, and at the moment you have that too.
Robert and I have never hidden anything from one another. He wouldn't wish me to decide upon a matter that concerns us both without consulting him. Do you object to my putting the whole thing before him?
Oh, not a bit. But I can tell you at once what his answer will be. He'll say he loves you. And if he must choose between you and everything that has seemed to make his life worth living, he chooses you without a moment's hesitation. But while he's in the very act of renouncing the world for your sake, look in his eyes. And perhaps you'll see in them the shadow, the merest shadow of regret. And perhaps in 10 years, when I bring an ill-spent life to a close, you will say to yourself, if I hadn't sacrificed him, he might be standing now in the shoes of that poor, old, incompetent Perigon.
I don't believe Robert is ambitious.
You have to be a shrewd observer always to know the difference between ambition and patriotism.
I could think the world well lost for love.
Ah, yes, but you're a woman. Do you think a man can? Now, may I ring and ask if my carriage has come back? I asked Colby to fetch me in it so that we might run down to the house together.
Mr. Colby.
Oh, there you are, Colby.
I thought I'd come up for one moment, sir, just to say how do you do to Kate.
I should have been furious if you hadn't, Robert.
Well, I'll just go up and see your father, Kate.
Oh, he'll be so pleased. I'll take you up.
No. I couldn't hear of it. I can easily find my way.
I'll do my best to entertain you, Kate, while the Prime Minister is gone. I jumped for joy when he sent me a note asking me to call for him here.
You might have come of your own accord.
I'm always afraid that I shall bore you if I come too often. I rack my brains for plausible excuses to present myself at your front door. What's the matter, Kate?
Nothing.
I thought you seemed worried.
Do you know that you haven't shown the least desire to kiss me?
My dear, I was obeying your strict commands.
If you really wanted to, you wouldn't have cared 2 straws for my commands.
My darling.
No, stay where you are. If you didn't think of it of your own accord, it's too late.
What on earth's the matter with you?
If you love me, why don't you say so sometimes?
Good heavens, it's on the tip of my tongue every moment of the day.
Oh, forgive me. It's just that I want to know that you love me.
Come here, Kate. Oh, my darling. Now, do you understand?
You're all I have in the world. I don't know what I should do if I lost you.
In a very little while now, dearest, we shall belong to one another for good.
I wonder how much you love me.
With all my heart.
Do you love me enough to...
What?
Nothing. I'm being silly and sentimental. Let's be as well behaved as we generally are. I want to put a purely hypothetical case to you. Supposing you had to choose between me and your career, which would you choose?
You, of course.
How glibly you say it.
Well, fortunately, I should never be forced to make such a tremendous choice.
Of course not.
Then why the dickens do you suggest it?
Because I'm nervous and restless and rather bored. I wanted to hear you say that you wouldn't hesitate to sacrifice the world for my sake.
Oh, you silly girl.
Bob, hold me in your arms again. Bob, darling.
Why, darling, you're shaking. Something is the matter. Tell me.
No, let me go. Someone's coming.
Your father insisted on coming downstairs, Keith.
I really can't stand my room any longer, and I can walk quite well now.
I thought Dr. O'Farrell said you were to stay upstairs till tomorrow, Father.
Oh, O'Farrell's an idiot.
Oh, it certainly looks as if you're better when you start abusing your doctor.
I hope I haven't kept you waiting, Kirby.
No, sir, not a bit.
Lady Frances has been showing me an old photograph. I looked at it blankly, and then she said, "Don't you remember? It's so-and-so." It gave me quite a start.
Really?
Yes. It was the photograph of a young lady I'd been so madly in love with that I asked her to run away with me. Married woman and all that sort of thing. And would you believe it? 30 years have passed since then, and upon my soul, I didn't know her from Adam.
Or Eve.
You must congratulate yourself, sir.
I do. I'm not a high-minded, quixotic fellow like you, and I don't mind telling you that I find it very agreeable to be Secretary for Foreign Affairs and Prime Minister. And yet, at the time, if anyone had given me the choice between my present position and a trip across Europe with the object of my affections, I wouldn't have hesitated.
A merciful providence evidently had you under its care.
Well, we must be off. We mustn't let even this charming lady interfere too much with the working of the British Empire.
Goodbye.
You must get your mother to show you that photograph, Kate. 30 years ago, I thought the little hussy more attractive than that. Goodbye, Frank. I hope your foot will be all right in a day or two.
Yes.
Come along, Kirby.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Kate. Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, Kirby. Yes, I remember that little woman quite well. Not much to look at. I wondered at the time what Peregrine saw in her.
You don't want me just now, Father, do you?
No, dear. Are you going out?
I'm only going to my room. I want to be alone for a little bit.
Oh, are you not feeling well, my dear?
Mr. Bennett.
Ah, Mr. Bennett. Forgive me if I don't get up. Very well, Kate, run along, dear.
I'm glad to see you're better, my lord.
Is anything the matter?
I thought your lordship expected me. You telephoned.
I?
Perhaps Mr. Winter.
Ah, yes, of course. George didn't mention it. I suppose he wants me to sign checks. Well, I can do it just as well here as at the office. I think Mr. Winter is still here. Would you mind ringing?
Yes, certainly.
Ah, George, we were just going to ring.
I've given orders that no one is to be let up until Ford and Swalecliffe arrive from Middlepool.
Oh, by Jove, I'd forgotten all about them. I say, George, you made a mistake in letting them come.
And I've told Lady Frances that we shall want the room to ourselves and no one's to come in without knocking.
Oh. By the way, was it you who sent for Bennett?
It was. Your gout has come in very handy.
Hmm?
Sit down, Fred.
I think.
Make ourselves cozy. Quite comfortable, Etchingham.
Yes, quite, thank you.
Foot all right?
I don't feel it at the moment.
I thought you might like to know at once that MacDonald's report on the mine has come.
Ah, well, that is good news. Now we can get to work at once.
Have you got it with you, Fred?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm sure his lordship would like to have a look at it.
Yes, indeed. Hand it over, Bennett. Oh, this is really a thrilling moment. I believe I'm going to make my fortune at last.
As you justly remark, it's a thrilling moment.
Here you are, my lord.
Thank you. Impressive document, isn't it?
Rather technical.
Yes, indeed. It's upon my soul. I don't know why MacDonald can't put it into plain English.
I'm thankful he didn't put it any plainer.
I must honestly confess that I don't quite grasp what he means.
I thought you wouldn't. The long and the short of it can be told in a dozen words.
Ah. Well?
The mine was practically worked out when we bought it.
What?
There's no gold there worth speaking of. We've been done in the eye, and we're £80,000 to the bad.
You're joking.
Read the report.
Then...
Your fortune is beginning to look rather silly, isn't it? So's mine.
Is this true, Mr. Bennett?
I'm afraid it is, my lord.
My God. What's to be done now?
What do you think ought to be done? You're chairman of the syndicate. Your opinion can't fail to be valuable.
Oh, we must just pocket our loss, I suppose.
Mm. With things in their present state, a loss like that is about as much as we can stand.
But the slump must come to an end soon.
We've been saying that for the last 2 months.
Then what the deuce is to be done?
That is what we're asking you.
We've got the Lewishams to reckon with.
Now's their time to make a raid on us.
I've put all my eggs in this basket. I thought I was going to be rich at last. I wanted to get out of the whole thing. I wanted to live quietly and comfortably.
What are you going to do, sir?
Suppress the report. Go ahead as if we believed in the mine. We've got the government expert's report in which we bought the thing. We'll put that in the prospectus.
But isn't that dishonest?
Very.
George.
It's an axiom in mining circles that when you've got hold of a rotten thing, the proper course is to pass it on to the British public.
But the public will find out there's no gold there when you pay no dividends.
Oh, we'll pay dividends. For a year or two. By then we shall have turned the corner, and we'll find another carrot for the British public.
But you say yourself it's dishonest.
There's another point you seem to have forgotten.
What is that?
We paid for the mine with money that didn't belong to us.
What? What do you mean?
Has it escaped your memory that you and I are directors of the Middlepool Investment Trust?
Well?
We had to plank down £80,000 within 24 hours or lose the mine.
It looked like a certainty.
At that moment, it was impossible for us to raise anything like that sum. The bank held £100,000 of bearer bonds for the Middlepool Investment Trust. They delivered them on an order, signed by you, me, and Bennett. We borrowed on them and completed the purchase of a worthless mine.
But I've never signed anything.
Yes, you did, my lord. They wouldn't have delivered the bonds without.
Then my signature's been forged.
Don't you remember one day after an excellent luncheon, I asked you to come up into the office and sign some papers?
But I never looked at them. I didn't know. I saw you sign them. I added my signature without hesitation.
Ah, that's your affair.
You've tricked me. You're a common swindler. In a month, we may all be in prison.
I hear they make you very comfortable there nowadays.
Well, I see my duty before me. I didn't know. But now, there can be no excuse for me. I must go to Scotland Yard at once. I shall make a clean breast of the whole thing.
No, don't be a fool. Listen to me. If we go under, you go under too. Let there be no doubt in your mind about that.
I must do my duty.
Your duty is to keep your head and help us out of the mess as best you can.
But nothing can be done. The mine's worthless. How are we to raise £80,000?
We've got 6 weeks before we need to replace the bonds. If we can do it by then, no one will ever know they've left the cellars of the bank.
There's no more chance of replacing them in 6 weeks than there is the day after tomorrow.
Yes, there is. If we can float the company. That's where you come in. I've got to keep my seat in the house. I want all my prestige. I can't have a divorce. You must go to Kate at once and tell her that the only way she can save you from prison is by telling these men who are coming from Middlepool that she has no cause for complaint against me.
Good God. I'd forgotten, Kate. You want me to go and tell my daughter that I'm a thief and a swindler and throw myself on her mercy?
That's it.
I'll see you damned first.
The alternative is prison. It's not very nice, penal servitude. Is it, Fred? You know all about it. You can tell him.
Sir!
Mr. Bennett, what does he mean?
Fred's a solicitor who was struck off the roll.
What?
He was sentenced to 3 years for misappropriating a client's money.
Good God. Is that true, Mr. Bennett?
Yes, my lord.
I never knew.
Well, of course you didn't. It's not the kind of thing you'd expect him to brag about, is it? But it'll go worse with him if we're found out, because he's been at it before. Tell him what it's like, Fred.
Oh, sir, don't.
I knew him before he went in. His name was Feltman then. And when they let him out, I took him because I felt sure he had everything to gain by sticking by me and everything to lose by giving me away.
Good heavens.
Oh, who the devil's that? Come in. What is it? I told you we weren't to be disturbed, Thompson.
The gentlemen have come, sir.
Oh, no.
I'll ring when you can show them in.
Very good, sir.
Now, go to Kate. Tell her what I've told you. And say the only way she can save you is by giving in.
I'll see you damned first.
What?
I tell you, I won't. And you can go to hell.
My lord, you don't know what you're doing.
Do you mean to say you refuse to speak to Kate?
If I speak to her, it'll only be to tell her that you are a rotten scoundrel. It's worth her while to put up with anything to be rid of you.
It means 7 years. You know that, don't you?
For you and that dirty convict there.
You think you can get off by turning on this, but you can't. We've got you tight.
You miserable fellow. Do you think I shall try to escape my penalty?
Ah, tomfoolery. We haven't got time for hyperlooting now. Those fellows can't be kept waiting all night. Kate's the only person who can save us. And you.
I tell you, I won't. You've made a cat's paw of me. And you thought you're only going to say the word and I'd come to heel.
You've done it often enough before.
Don't expect any mercy from him, my lord.
I don't want any mercy. You think you've got me tight. Don't you know that I've got a way of escape whenever I choose to take it?
What are you going to do?
That is my business.
I see.
What does he mean, sir?
Do you think you'd have the courage to shoot yourself, Edging?
What? Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Where are you going?
Get out of my way, you damned bounder.
Ring that bell, Fred.
That'll bring those men up. Don't you remember?
Ring the bell, damn you.
What are you going to do?
Oh, hello. I thought you were routing out your pistols by now.
You're not going to see those fellows.
They'll insist on seeing Mrs. Winter.
Then I shall send for her.
Oh, you needn't think she'll back you up in your confounded lies.
Anyhow, I dare say you'd like to wait and see.
Have you got something up your sleeve?
My dear fellow, our sex would be at an impossible disadvantage in its dealings with the other if it were not for the most obstinate of all their passions, self-sacrifice.
You're counting on that.
You've given Kate such a training in it that I can't help thinking it's become a habit.
I won't say a word to move her.
Like all great men, I leave as little as possible to chance.
Perigal.
That's it.
Do you think there is a chance, sir?
We must risk it. It's the only thing left.
Mr. Swalecliffe and Mr. James Ford.
How do you do? I'm delighted to see you. I hope I haven't kept you waiting.
Not a bit. It's of no consequence.
Let me introduce you to my father-in-law. Mr. Ford, Mr. Swalecliffe, Lord Francis Etching.
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you, Lord Francis.
It's very kind of you to say so.
When I suggested to Lord Francis that it would be more convenient for you to come here, he put his house at my disposal. My wife is staying here, you know.
Oh.
We're doing up the house in Portman Square, and she can't stand the smell of paint. Now, sit down and make yourselves comfortable, won't you? Have you had tea?
Yes, thank you.
Then we'll get to business at once, shall we?
I should like to say, before we go any further, that it is with the greatest regret that Mr. Ford and I have come up to London on such an errand.
Mm. There's been a lot of gossip in Middlepool, and we thought the shortest way to settle it was to come up and see you.
Yes.
You and I are old friends, George. We've had business dealings together for the past 20 years. But it's a question of winning the election or losing it. There's never been much in it, one way or another. And 50 votes, more or less, will make all the difference.
I want to tell you frankly, Mr. Winter, that I should feel it my duty to vote against you if there were any truth in the reports that have been going about. And I should feel it my duty to advise my congregation to follow my example.
Well, that's clear enough in all conscience. Gentlemen, the best answer I can make to you is that I receive you in my father-in-law's house. My wife is upstairs in her mother's boudoir. I give you my word of honor that there is not the smallest shadow of truth in any single syllable that you have heard.
We don't doubt your word, Mr. Winter, but we came to London with a particular object.
The committee discussed it at length, and the majority agreed
that... Of course. Etchingham, will you give these gentlemen the assurance?
I think the whole thing's damned impertinent.
You're only wasting time, George.
We made up our minds that we must have a certain assurance from the lips of Mrs. Winter. Then we can go back to Middlepool with comfortable minds.
Do you mean to say you wish to cross-examine my wife? No decent woman would stand it. I refuse to ask her to expose herself to such a degradation.
That means that you don't represent Middlepool in next Parliament, George Winter.
I'd sooner lose my seat than expose a defenseless woman to such humiliation. You can go and tell that to your committee and be damned to you.
But we came up from Middlepool on the understanding that we were to see your wife, Mr. Winter.
My wife is in very delicate health, Mr. Swalecliff.
We shan't keep her more than 5 minutes. You'd be wise to let common sense get the better of your pretty sentiments.
Very well. I'll ring for her.
I think it's the best thing, you know, George.
But if she refuses to answer, I warn you that I shall not say a word to persuade her. I think the whole thing's a perfect scandal.
Yes, sir?
Thompson, tell Mrs. Winter that Lord Francis and I would be very much obliged if she'd come to the drawing room for one moment.
Very good, sir.
Well, gentlemen, I hope you're satisfied.
We merely wish your wife to answer the questions that were put to you in your agent's letter on behalf of the committee.
I have no more to say.
Yes, George?
Ah, Kate. These are the gentlemen of whom I spoke to you. Gentlemen, here is my wife.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Winter? Pleased to see you.
How do you do?
We've not had the pleasure of welcoming you in Middlepool for some time.
I've not been very well lately.
Mr. Winter, will you ask your wife the question?
No, Mr. Swalecliff. If you're not ashamed to ask the question, you may ask it yourself.
I am a stranger to Mrs. Winter. The matter requires some explanation.
No use making any bones about it, Swalecliff. Mrs. Winter, I'm sorry to put you in this position, but there it is, and it can't be helped. There are busybodies everywhere, and Middlepool has its fair share of them. There's been a lot of gossip about you and your good man, and if we don't look out, it'll lose him the election.
What do you want me to say to you?
Well, we want to be able to go back to Middlepool and tell them we've had it from your own lips that there's no truth in these reports.
That you may do. The reports are quite untrue.
You've no intention of divorcing your husband?
None whatever.
You've never had any intention?
Good Lord, isn't that enough for you?
Yes, we won't bother you anymore.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mrs. Winter. Thank you very much. And I'm glad that you've put our minds at rest. George, shake hands.
I'll shake hands with you, James. But I can't help saying that I could have expected more charity, more confidence in me from men who make a practice of belief in the Christian church.
That's all right.
I can understand your vexation, Mr. Winter, but we were in a very difficult position.
Anyhow, we must get along. And if we look sharp, we'll catch the 5:40 back to Middlepool.
Oh, yes, yes.
Good afternoon to you, Mrs. Winter.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Mr. Bennett will show you out. Goodbye.
Haven't you any idea where Winter could be, Boyce?
That's his election agent, Colonel. I should have thought you'd know his movements, particularly on election day.
Well, he's booked to speak at a meeting at 10:30, but you know what he is. Half a dozen places at once.
Have you sent down to the meeting?
Yes, Mr. Ford, of course I have. I sent Teddy O'Donnell down to tell him to come to the hotel at once.
Oh, confound those trains. Why did Winter have to pick an hotel right on top of the station? 3 weeks of it, too, we've had.
Worst place in Middlepool for a hotel. Glad I didn't put any money into it.
You're sure he won't go to the committee rooms, Colonel?
If he does, Mr. Swalecliff, he'll be sent on. I thought it would cause a lot of gossip if we had a meeting there. That's why I suggested meeting in his sitting room at the hotel.
I wish to goodness you wouldn't look so depressed, Mr. Swalecliff.
You're a businessman, Mr. Ford. Do you think there's any truth in this article?
You'd better ask Lord Francis here. He's chairman of the new company. I'm only an investor.
Good Lord, I wish Winter would come.
I've applied for 10,000 shares. You don't suppose I like it when an article comes out in a financial paper on the day of issue that the mine's practically worked out? And Winter's expert has reported that the ore's not worth the cost of crushing.
Everybody who's got a penny to spare in Middlepool has applied for shares. The damnable thing is that it should happen on the day of the election.
Here are the London papers, gentlemen.
Oh, good, Mr. Bennett. Now we shall know the worst.
The financial news.
Yes? Come along.
No, that's got nothing. That's got nothing.
Here it is, the financial standard.
Give it to me, Mr. Bennett.
I wish to goodness I'd never thought of stocks and shares. I knew it was wrong. Oh, what a punishment.
Oh,
steep, isn't it, Mr. Ford?
If the Tories print this, it'll about bust us.
The whole thing's a pack of lies. It's scandalous that such methods should be used to influence an election.
But what does it say?
Merely what they phoned down from London, Mr. Swale.
But it puts it about as hot as I've ever seen a financial article.
You think it'll interfere with the issue?
It'll bust it.
But can't something be done to find Winter?
All we can do is to wait. Young O'Donnell will track him down.
Hang it all, we can't go on waiting and waiting and waiting. Isn't there one of you who can do something?
Keep your head, man. That's about the best thing you can do.
It's all right. It's all right. I've got him.
Oh, thank God. Where did you find him, Teddy?
He was going to speak to some fellows in the factory.
He's coming?
Yes. He's here now.
Did he want to know what it was about?
There was no time for him to ask. And he was talking to a whole crowd when I found him.
He knows it's important.
Ah,
Here he is.
Oh. At last.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Oh. Morning.
Quite a party.
We thought you were never coming, George.
Well, what's the trouble?
Look at this paper. That's the trouble. The Financial Standard has got an attack on the mine.
Is that all?
It's a good deal.
Well, the Lewishams have got the Financial Standard in their pocket.
You read it.
They say there's no gold in the mine.
What do they know about it? They've not been there, and my expert has.
That's just it. They say you're floating it on the report the owners gave you when you bought it, and you're holding back McDonald's.
Extraordinary, isn't it, what a lot the papers know.
But they say...
Yes, what is it? London call. You'd better go into my bedroom and speak to them, Fred.
All right.
No, don't connect with me. Put it through to my bedroom. Mr. Bennett will take it in there. It's one of my brokers.
Oh.
Now, let's go on. As abuse, I don't really think very much of this. I could have said much unpleasanter things about myself.
You seem to take it very calmly.
I've not been fighting the Lewishams for 10 years without getting some pretty hard words broken on my back.
Do you see that bit about where the money came from?
I didn't see that.
Well, I'll read it to you, shall I? It is stated that Mr. Winter paid £80,000 for this precious mine. It would perhaps be interesting to inquire how he was able to raise such a sum at a time not only of general stringency, but of peculiar difficulty in the Central American market. Perhaps Mr. Winter, like King Midas, is able to turn into gold everything he touches. And he may have been able to change his office furniture into precious metal. Perhaps not.
Dear.
Oh, childish, isn't it? Do they think I'm going to let out my little trade secrets to please them?
But where did you get the money?
My dear James, you don't suppose I stole it, do you? That's where the born financier comes in. He makes money as a conjurer makes a white rabbit appear out of a silk handkerchief.
A very satisfactory explanation.
But that's hardly the point, is it?
Something must be done at once.
Had the Tories got hold of it?
They're printing the article on posters.
Nuisance, isn't it?
Is there any truth at all in that article, Mr. Winter?
Not a word, Mr. Swalecliffe.
It puts me in a very awkward position.
Well, what's the matter with you?
I thought the shares would go to a premium before they were issued.
Like the San Jose tramways, eh?
Mr. Ford says this'll bust the issue.
Nice of him. Ah, been having a little gamble, have you?
If it was a certainty, I didn't see there'd be any harm in it.
Like playing with a loaded dice. How many shares have you applied for?
500.
Sporting of you.
I didn't mean to take them up, you understand. I haven't got more than £500 in the world. I thought they were bound to go up half a crown.
500 half crowns are quite worth having, aren't they?
It's been a lesson to me. I'll never do anything like it again. I shan't have the chance. If I have to pay for the shares...
Get my checkbook, Teddy.
Yes, sir. What are you going to do?
I don't want anyone to come into this concern who doesn't believe in it. Make out a check for £500 to Mr. Swalecliffe, Teddy.
Yes, sir. Oh,
that's very generous of you, Mr. Winter.
Generous? Not a bit of it. You don't think I mind having 500 shares more, do you?
Do you think they're worth it?
They'll be worth £10 apiece in 6 months, or I'm a Dutchman.
Yes, sir.
That's right, Teddy. There. My check, Mr. Swalecliffe.
Oh, thanks.
That looks as if you had confidence in the mine.
Do you want me to buy your shares off you, James?
Not just yet, thank you.
But what's the meaning of the article, then?
Why, it's as plain as a pikestaff. The Lewishams were willing to give their eyes for the mine, but I was too much for them. Now they're crabbing it, that's all.
But then, in that case, this...
You pay that check into your bank, Mr. Swalecliffe, and hand over the certificate to me when you get it.
Do you think they will go to a premium?
I've no doubt of it. I dare say the 500 half-crowns will be just as useful to me as to you, but I shall hold on. I want a bigger profit than that.
Well, if they're good enough for you, they're good enough for me.
No, you've taken my check now. It's too late.
There's your check. You can have it back again. I'm going to keep the shares.
Well, I don't mind. It wouldn't make much difference to me. But don't sell them, whatever you read in the papers. What's a profit of half a crown? Wait till you've got a profit of £5, and then you can think of selling them.
£5? That'd be 2,500.
Wait a minute. Boyce, get on to Bishop and Jones.
The printers?
Yes, we must answer this article. I've just been thinking what we'd better say.
What's the number? 703.
That's it, yes.
That's the exchange. Get me 703, you know.
I'm going to make it hot and strong.
Isn't there anything I can do?
Bishop and Jones?
Yes, tell them to have everything ready to print off a couple of thousand posters at once. You're just coming round in the car.
Right. Hello?
Will you get
what do you think of this, Ford?
Let's have a look.
Etchingham?
Yeah.
You see, we've got the advantage that they have to print a whole article, and we only need a couple of sentences.
Yes, that seems all right.
Couldn't be better.
Now, make a copy of this, Teddy.
Right, sir.
And make it sharp.
We haven't got any time to lose.
The car's at the door. You can get hold of the bill posters.
Oh, yes, there'll be no bother about that.
Have you finished, Teddy?
Nearly, sir. There we are.
Right. Take it, Boyce, and hurry up.
Trust me.
Teddy?
Sir.
Jump into a cab and go round to the newspaper offices and tell them to put that in their next edition. Biggest type they've got. Then go to the committee rooms and wait. I'll ring you up there or come round.
Right.
And hustle or I'll sack you.
You're taking it better than I expected.
What do you expect me to do? Bang my head on the floor and tear out my hair? I can't afford it. It takes me all my time to keep my hair on.
Here's Bennett.
Ah. Well?
Nothing much has happened, sir. They're a bit excited in the city.
No bad drop in anything.
Nothing to speak of.
Oh, that's a relief.
Everything's sound. No one would be such a fool as to do a bear.
I'm getting on to McLaren and Hewitt.
Oh, that's all right. I wanted them.
Are they brokers?
Yes. Look here, James. I'm due to speak in the cattle market now. I wish you'd go down there and keep them going till I turn up. I shall only be 10 minutes. You've got the line all right, Fred?
Yes.
Well, I don't mind if I do that. There's nothing I can do here.
No, leave it all to me. Your interests are my interests.
So, I'll make tracks then.
That's good.
Coming, Swalecliff.
Yes, of course.
Well, Fred?
I thought I'd better not say too much while Ford was there.
I saw something was up. That's why I got rid of him.
Things are bad.
Good Lord.
The Lewishams are going for us.
I thought they would as soon as I saw the article.
Who's given it away, do you think?
Oh, how do I know? That doesn't matter. The only thing is to face it.
Do you mean our shares are falling, Mr. Bennett?
There's a lot of selling, my lord.
I wish we could corner them. I'd like to give the bears a lesson.
If it goes on, there'll be a panic.
You've told the brokers to do all they can to prevent its going too far.
I've told them to buy, but carefully.
Look, you must go up to London, Fred. There's no one there with a head on his shoulders.
I thought that was the best thing myself. I've looked out the trains. I can just catch the express. I shall be there soon after one.
Go at once. I give you a free hand.
If the slump can be stopped, I'll stop it.
It's not a matter of can. It must be stopped. And wire reassuring messages. We must hang on to the telephone for all we're worth. Come back when the house closes. We must talk over things.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Is it all up with us, George?
Oh, what the dickens are you talking about?
Well, they found out the truth. It's there, in black and white, that the wretched mine is worthless.
They can't prove anything.
Ever since I knew, I've scarcely closed my eyes at night. I wish I'd shot myself when you first told me. The worst of it is, at first I was overcome with the horror of it. But little by little, I've got used to it. Used to your being a thief and a swindler.
You put things rather bluntly, don't you, Etchingham?
And Bennett, an ex-convict. It all seems quite natural now, and I can talk and laugh with you, and I eat by your side every day.
One can't make a fortune without taking risks.
There are always those missing bonds there in my thoughts day and night.
No one can make inquiries for 3 weeks. By that time, we shall have gone to allotment, and the bonds will be safely back in the black box.
But will you be able to go to allotment?
Of course we shall. This article isn't going to do us any harm. I shall win the seat. That'll give these Middlepool people confidence.
George, I believe Ford is uneasy. I don't trust him. Supposing he found out about the bonds.
Well, he might be devilish expensive.
You'll never buy Ford.
I never met the man yet who hadn't his price. Flattery if he's a fool. Hard cash if he's a wise man. But a price of some sort. There's always a price.
Take care of Ford, George.
I'm not frightened.
Sometimes I'm afraid. You're so confident. It's impossible a thing like this can end well.
Look, I've been in tight corners before now, but I've wriggled out of them. I'm stronger than ever I was. The ball's at my feet and I've only got to set it rolling. In 10 years, I shall be the richest man in London. In 15, I shall be a peer.
I wonder how many ruined lives will be sacrificed to give you all you want.
Oh, rubbish. I flutter the will of the wisp of gain before the covetous, and they follow. They want to make money without working for it. Look, Swalecliff gambles with his £500. His £500 will find its way into my pocket. It's his own lookout. By George, I've got an idea.
What?
The Lewishams can't attack my stocks without weakening their own. We're in the same boat, and if one of us shakes it, both will topple out.
What do you mean?
We'll attack the Lewishams. I'll get on to my brokers at once. Look, go to the post office and wire to Bennett. He's sure to call at the office. Tell him to sell Lewishams.
Sell Lewishams?
He'll twig. Why didn't I think of it before? We'll make the Lewishams sorry they started this game.
you see to sew, Kate, dear? Wouldn't you like some more light?
No, Mother, the light hurts my eyes.
You're looking very pale, darling.
I haven't been sleeping very well here. The hotel's so near the trains, and they seem to run all night.
I wonder how George can stand it. His bedroom is practically on the railway.
Yes, you just walk down a flight of steps into the garden, and there you are, within 20 feet of the line.
Thank heaven the election's over. We shall know the results in half an hour, and tomorrow we can go back to London. What are you going to do, Kate?
Nothing.
I'm afraid you're very unhappy.
Please don't think that, Mother.
You've given up everything for our sake.
I wish I could think so. I gave up my divorce because I was afraid. I couldn't risk the regret that Robert might feel later.
What did you tell him?
I wrote and said I found it impossible to go on with my action. I begged him not to try to move me. I told him I was very unhappy.
Poor child.
He wrote very kindly, made it as easy for me as he could. Now it's all over. I've lost my last chance of happiness. I'm bound to my husband for the rest of my life.
And do you still love Robert?
Yes. And I'm glad of what I've done. Only thing that helps me is thinking of all the great things he's going to do. And it will have been me. I gave him the opportunity.
Well, you are a strange pair.
Anne.
How on earth can you sit here and sew while the counting's going on? Oh, I've never been so excited in my life.
Why have you come back?
Well, it's nearly finished now. Teddy said there'd be rather a scrummage when the result was known, and I'd better get out of the way.
Obedient child.
It rather amuses me to be ordered about. Besides, I couldn't help seeing that nobody wanted me. Teddy promised he'd rush round as soon as the result was out. Oh, I love an election.
Oh, dear.
I've never had such a time in my life. I've enjoyed every minute of these last 3 weeks. I hope Teddy will go into Parliament.
On 400 a year.
Oh, George will give us a rise. He says Teddy's awfully useful. George is good, isn't he?
I'm glad you're so happy, darling.
Here's Father. Father, is it over?
No. No, I was too anxious to stay any longer.
But George is going to get in.
Oh, who can tell? The seat has always been lost or held by a handful of votes.
But how did it seem to be going?
Oh, Winter Morton. One vote on one side, one vote on the other. It seemed interminable.
George won by 75 last time.
Yes, but who can tell the effect of all these rumors and suspicions and attacks? They may just have made the difference. Oh, it's maddening.
Sit down, Father, and rest. You look quite exhausted.
Even George is anxious. I know his face so well. He's trying to appear as if he was certain.
Oh, no one could help being anxious. I thought I heard some shouting. Oh, I wish I hadn't come away.
Open the window, Anne. Perhaps we shall hear something.
Yes, I'm sure it's cheering. It's cheering. Come on the balcony, Mother.
I expect they're reading out the figures.
Oh, Kate. My dear, will you ever forgive me?
Oh, Father, don't. It was very noble of you not to tell me anything before I decided. Now that I know the whole truth...
But if it was all in vain, if he's not able to float the company and the truth comes out, then I shall have sacrificed you for nothing.
Oh, don't think of it, Father.
He's in!
Oh!
He's in!
Oh, thank
Teddy.
God! We're saved! Oh, Katie!
Father, dear!
Teddy, what's the majority?
Oh, isn't it wonderful? I knew he'd do it.
He had a majority of 27.
I say, what a narrow squeeze.
Oh, just at the end, I thought we were beaten. It was Morton, till I almost screamed.
Never mind, George is in!
By Jove, it was a moment to live for when the figures were read out. You never heard such shouting.
Where is he now?
When I left, he was making a speech to the crowd, but no one could hear a word because everyone was shouting at the top of his voice. I simply bellowed.
Aren't you glad, Kate?
Yes, Anne. Very glad.
But how can you take it so quietly?
Is George coming here?
Yes. Oh, I forgot to give you his message. He sent his love to Kate and he said he'd be here almost at once.
Oh, I wish he'd hurry up. Isn't he wonderful?
George Winter's the greatest man I've ever known. I don't know what there is about him, but you can't help believing in him. And he was so splendid this morning about those confounded lies in the paper. All the rest of them were like frightened rabbits, but he never turned a hair.
Glorious victory!
Oh, oh, nice.
Did you hear the shouting?
Oh, George, isn't it splendid?
Thank God.
Oh, you haven't been worried about it, have you? I knew I'd get in. I never had a moment's doubt about it.
Well, no one can say that you don't believe in yourself, George.
Oh, well, hang it all, James. If you don't believe in yourself, how can you expect other people to believe in you?
The suspense was awful, George.
So glad it's all over. Now we can all go to bed and sleep peacefully.
George, yeah? I'd like to have a word with you when you can spare me a few minutes.
Oh, as many as you like, James. I'm ready now.
now.
Well, if you're going to talk business, we'd better leave you. Come along, Anne. Say good night.
Good night, George, dear.
Good night, my chick. Mm-hmm.
You're wonderful, George. Good night, George. I congratulate you. It's been a great triumph.
Oh, it's only the beginning, Lady Frances. I've got the world at my feet. In 10 years, I shall be crying like Alexander because there are no more worlds to conquer.
Good night.
Good night.
You don't want me anymore, do you, sir?
No, Teddy, you go to bed. You're young and you want your beauty sleep. I'll be bound you're not worried by the train.
No.
Where's your room?
It's just above yours, but I sleep like a top.
Ah, that's a good sign. You'll be as great a man as I am one of these days.
Good night.
And you better go up to Etchingham. You look tired out.
It's been an exciting day for all of us.
Oh, it's been one of the days that make life worth living. Good night.
Good night.
George, I won't say good night to you just yet. If Mr. Ford's not going to keep you waiting long, I should like to speak to you afterwards.
Oh, it'll be 10 minutes at the utmost, Mrs. Winter.
I'm at your disposal, my darling, now and always.
Good night, Mr. Ford.
Good night, Mrs. Winter.
Well, James, what can I do for you?
You haven't forgotten that article in the Financial Standard.
Oh, is that what you want to talk to me about? Well, I tell you, that shan't disturb my night's rest. By the way, that reminds me. If I have won the election, it was through no help of yours. I asked you to go down and speak in the cattle market, and when I got there, I found there'd been no sign of you. It might have been devilish awkward.
Well, it so happens it didn't matter.
Where did you get to, after all?
I went up to London.
Did you?
I was struck by one of the paragraphs in that article. The one about where you got the money from. Then it struck me that the Middlepool Investment Trust has got a large batch of bonds lying in the bank.
Well, they're lying there still.
Will you take your oath on that?
Yes.
The more I thought of it, the more nervous I was. I went to the bank. They showed me an order for delivery of the bonds, signed by you, Etchingham and Bennett.
Have a cigar, will you?
No. What have you done with those bonds?
If they're in their place when the auditor makes his examination, no one has any question to ask.
You had no more right to touch them than my office boy has the right to take a sovereign from the petty cash.
And what the devil do you mean by that?
I'm a director of the Middlepool Investment Trust. I insist on the bonds being produced at once.
They shall be produced in a fortnight.
No, no, my friend, that won't do.
Oh, don't be a fool, James. You know as well as I do. Business is business.
Yes, and not theft.
Dare you speak to me like that?
It's no good trying to bluster with me, George. I've seen you do it at shareholders' meetings, and very effective it is sometimes, but this isn't the time for it.
All right, then. I knew the mine was a good thing. I pledged the bonds to pay for it. I shall get them back as soon as the money comes from the issue. Now you've got the truth.
It's theft. Pure and simple.
I suppose you want to come in with me. I'll give you your shares for nothing. That means £10,000. And if you hold on to them, they'll be worth £50,000 in a year.
Thank you. I'm not going to risk a lifetime's honest work for a few thousand pounds.
Then, what do you want?
Nothing.
Oh, come, James, we've been good friends for 20 years. You're not going to push me down now that I'm almost at the top of the tree. Look, if you'll only give me a month, I can put everything right.
A minute ago, it was a fortnight. I don't believe it. These things don't come right. When a man has crossed the line that separates honesty from dishonesty, he never gets back.
If you give me away now, it'll mean a general smash. The only chance of saving things is to go on. The money's gone. You won't get it back by giving me up to the police.
I must take my chance of that. After all, if I don't speak, it makes me a party to the crime. It can be proved that I went to the bank today.
Ah, now you're saying something I can understand. Now, if I can show you by plain figures that I can put everything right if you'll only give me the time...
I tell you I can't. I've got my wife to think of and my boys. It's theft, and I must do my duty.
What are you going to do?
I must consult the chief constable.
Oh, you wouldn't do that. You don't seriously mean that you'd go to the police.
I could never respect myself again if I didn't. Oh, George, why have you put me in this position?
Oh, look here, old man. I've done wrong, I admit it. At the time, I thought the slump would only last a few days, and I thought I should be able to replace the bonds in a week. It's the only slip I've made. Don't be too hard on me. It wasn't a crime, only thoughtlessness. Give me another chance. Look, we've gone through bad times and good together. I've been a good friend to you. You've never had anything to reproach me with till now.
I can't risk the money of all these people again.
Will it satisfy you if I give up the directorship of the Middlepool Trust. Give me 6 months to save my face and I'll resign.
I'll tell you what I'll do. If the bonds are in their place by 4 o'clock tomorrow, I'll say nothing.
Tomorrow? That can't be done. It's impossible.
That's all I can do for you.
But no one can get it. You know it's impossible. Even if you gave me a week, I couldn't do it. I can't. I can't. With the attack on us today, we're tottering. It's as much as we shall be able to do to hold out till the tide turns. That's not giving me a chance. Tomorrow? It's absurd.
That's my last word.
Now, you might as well send for the police at once.
If the money is not there by the time the bank closes, I shall apply for a warrant.
Do you know what that means? A trial. And then prison.
I can't do more for you than I've offered.
You damned hypocrite. It's infamous. It's damned hypocrisy. You don't care if I've taken the money or not. You're afraid of your own skin, and you're jealous of me. You with your damn Christianity, your parrot cries of honesty. Damn you. Damn you. Damn you.
You see, you've gone too far, George. I shall never make you understand. You can't realize that a man may be honest even if he loses by it, just because he's made straight as some men are made crooked. You've got on in life through knowing that 9 men out of 10 are rascals. You've forgotten that the 10th man must cross your path at last.
Who said that to me before?
Goodbye, George. My promise holds.
It's no good to me. I'm like a rat in a trap. You can get what fun you like out of seeing me fight for my life.
I'm sorry, George.
The 10th man. He's beaten me. Kate, what the devil do you want?
I heard Mr. Ford go. May I speak to you now?
Well?
Now that the election's over, you can have no further use for me. I've carried out my part of the bargain.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I understand that I've condoned all your offences towards me, and I'm helpless now to do anything. I've come to you to tell you that now I've done all you exacted, I'm going to leave you. This time for good. I think there's nothing more to be said. I trust you to leave me in peace. I promise you on my side to do nothing that can inconvenience you. Bye. George, stop! Stop! George, what is it? George!
Oh, God's sake, give me a drink.
Here you are.
Oh, that's rich, that is. Rich.
What is it, George? It's not because I'm going away.
Your going away doesn't matter a damn to me. It means that I've been done in the eye. Those swindling rogues, the Lewishams, have got me at last. That article's done the trick, and I'm dished. You can go your own way now, Kate. You've got the better of me after all.
I don't understand.
Ford knows that the bonds have gone, and he's going to Scotland Yard.
No. Father!
Oh, I can't worry about your father now. He must look after his own skin. I've got enough to do to think of myself.
What shall I do?
Ford will give me till tomorrow to replace them, but I can't. It's impossible, and he knows I can't. Damned hypocrite. I always distrusted him. Sanctimonious prig. He's jealous of me. He wants to kick me off my perch so that he can take my place. And I know him. I know him inside out. He'll do what he says. It's his duty.
Can't we sell things? There's my jewelry.
Oh, a drop in the ocean. How can I get £80,000 in a falling market?
Do you mean to say they'll arrest you?
Oh. Think I'm going to stand that. And a trial and all the rest.
Is there no chance that you may get off?
Oh, even Bennett would give me a way to save himself. I know him. There's not a man I can trust. The only thing's to have done with it at once. I must get out of it while I have the chance.
Do you think there's any hope of your getting away?
My way. Yes.
George, you wouldn't do that.
What else do you expect me to do? Do
you think I'm going to bolt to America to be brought back in 6 months by a couple of detectives?
Wouldn't it be better to stay and face it?
They won't have mercy on me. It'll mean 10 years, and when I come out, it'll mean hiding, doing odd jobs like Bennett, dirty work for other men who won't risk their own skins. And what do you suppose a life like that is worth to me? I've aimed too high to be content with anything but the highest.
Oh, it's horrible.
Oh, come, Kate, honestly. If you loved me, wouldn't you wish me to make an end of it?
Oh, don't ask. Don't ask me.
Will you do something for me? It's the last thing I'll ever ask you.
I'll do anything I can.
I want half an hour to myself. You must let no one come to me under any pretext whatever.
How can I do it now?
Well, perhaps tomorrow I shouldn't have the nerve.
Oh, it's awful.
Oh, why? It's your freedom. You'll be ravishing in black, darling. It always suited you. I'm going to my room. Will you promise to prevent anyone from disturbing me?
Yes.
In half an hour, you can go to bed. I hope you'll sleep as soundly as I shall.
Oh, what shall I do? What shall I do?
I beg your pardon. I didn't expect to find anyone here. Where's Mr. Winter?
He can't see anyone tonight, Mr. Bennett.
He'll see me.
He left instructions that no one was to bother him.
It's a matter of life and death.
I tell you, you can't see him.
Isn't he in his room?
No.
Are you sure?
No, you're not to go in. He's tired out. Can't you let him rest?
Oh, but you don't know what's happened. The mine's all right. Oh, for goodness sake, let me go to him.
What do you mean?
The manager had taken MacDonald in. Hadn't shown him a new shaft they'd sunk. The place is crammed full of gold. It was only a dodge of the Lewishams. I did what the governor told me. I just flooded the market with selling orders of their stocks. And at closing time, Manny Lewisham sent for me. He offered to take Mr. Winter in. But I smelled a rat. I was too clever for him. He's going to buy a huge block of shares tomorrow at par. He's going to pay on the nail. And we're safe. We're safe. We're safe.
You mean
that's what he's been fighting for 10 years. At last he's got there. The shares will be worth anything you like in a month. It means wealth, safety, everything.
Then, George...
He's at the top of the tree. He's where he ought to be. In 10 years, he'll be in the House of Lords. Now do you see why I must see him?
No.
Please, Mrs. Winter.
I don't know where he is.
You don't know?
He went down to the smoking room.
Oh, I must find him.
No, stop. He's in the bedroom.
But you said...
George! George! George, unlock the door!
What's the matter?
George, it's all right. Open the door, for God's sake.
What's he doing? What's he doing?
Break down the door.
What?
Quickly, quickly.
I can't do it. I can't.
Break the glass panel, then. Here.
Yes, this thing will do it. There.
Can you get the key?
Yes. He's not there.
He must be. Must be.
The windows are wide open. He must have gone down those steps.
There's nowhere to go. There's only the garden and then the railway line.
Well, perhaps he's in the garden. I'll go down and see.
I say, what the devil's all this row? Bad enough to have the trains banging under one's window all night long. Upon me, soul, I never heard such a noise.
Father, where's George gone to? Where is he?
George? How the deuce should I know? I thought we'd all gone to bed.
Mr. Bennett wanted to see him urgently. We broke open the door and found him gone. Father, I know something terrible's happened.
No, my dear. You mustn't get silly ideas into your head. He's probably gone for a walk.
Along the railway line?
Kate! Kate!
Good heavens, Teddy, what's the matter?
I've just seen a most awful accident from my window.
No. No.
A man's been run over on the line.
Oh! No! No!
In that revival of Somerset Maugham's play, The Tenth Man,
adapted for radio by Peggy Wells. The part of George Winter was played by Clifford Norgate. Catherine Winter was played by Patricia Gallimore, Lord Francis Etchingham by Hector Ross, and Lady Francis by Joan Matheson. Martin Friend played Frederick Bennett, Carlton Hobbs, the Prime Minister, Peter Williams, Robert Colby, Gerald Cross, Mr. Ford, Michael Kilgariff, Mr. Swalecliffe, Charles Simon, Colonel Boyce, Patrick Tull, Thompson, Venetia Maxwell, Anne Etchingham, and David Robb, Edward O'Donnell. The Tenth Man was produced by David Geary.